Good afternoon and welcome to our Valentine's Day episode of And Then There's That, a bi-weekly podcast of people, politics, and punditry in Howard County on the HOCO Mojo Network. I'm Paul Scalney, and I'm here at the Mall in Columbia with my co-host, Dennis Lane. Joining us today is lobbyist and former state senator, Sandy Schrader. But as always, we first like to take a look at some of the news making the headlines this week.
Well, Paul,
Mr. Dennis,
as you mentioned, this is our Valentine's Day show, and Valentine's Day being Monday, tough night for Valentine's Day. Got to be tough for the restaurants to have it on Valentine's Day. But
I guess it's tough for those people to do something on Valentine's Day.
And that's the point. We were having a little discussion in our little meeting before the show about Valentine's Day, and you don't do anything big in your household for Valentine's Day.
You know, Cindy and I, like our producer, Dave and Alana, I think have just chalked it up to being sort of a Hallmark holiday. And we've agreed not to really do anything. There's really no expectation. We always tell our guests that they're free to pipe in during the news story. We haven't even gotten to the news story yet. Come on, Sandy, bring it on.
Ooh. Sandy, don't you think that some women will say, don't make a big deal out of Valentine's Day, but then if you don't do something, you do it.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, you do it at your own peril.
You have to do something. It's just a special day to recognize the person that you love. And actually, it's a celebration of the us. Not the individual.
With a husband like Dennis, you ought to be celebrating every day of the year.
The us or the we?
I do.
So if Dennis buys you a card, and it's a card that basically says, you're the light of my life. You've given me children and joy
and one child.
And some script that's been written by some guy in a cubicle in I don't know where's Hallmark, Kansas City,
Guadalupe.
Right.
Leavenworth.
I think it's offshore now, actually. Leavenworth. And they just signed.
No. You don't just sign it. You have to put a message in there.
Like how long a message?
3 to 5 sentences, at least.
3 to 5 sentences.
So first you have the message that you bought.
Right.
Then you have to create your own message.
Right. But I do like handmade cards.
No, handmade cards. Okay, so you can.
But you just can't sign your name. The love, Dennis. No.
I think there's a website for handmade cards. You can go to handmadecards.com.
My kids could make those. In fact, they do.
Well, before we go too far, I should note that as the show got started, the mall manager, Katie Essing, who has been a guest on our show, dropped by with some nice treats for us for Valentine's Day. It'd be nice to say we got some Godiva chocolates.
Some Walk-N-Foos
and See's candy. We'll battle that out over at the end of the show, who gets to take the chocolate home. But I thought that was...
So I guess those that claim to actually celebrate Valentine's Day are the ones that ought to be entitled to bring something home. So Dave and I are pretty much out the door.
but that's the other thing I don't get. This is the time of year that everybody and their brother, we're in the I'm going to get in shape diet season. But, Valentine's Day, it's chocolates. I guess that's the way you boost up sales in an otherwise slow time of year.
I guess that's the cynic in me.
Anyway.
So speaking of the deer of your life.
The deer of our life. There's a good segue.
So actually not a very good segue, but nevertheless, we have some good deer stories today. We can't get through too many shows without something about animals. So today the theme, at least we're going to start with, is deer.
Deers, yes.
So this is actually an article that I caught wind of earlier this week. And, it's not so much the story itself that I found all that interesting. It's the fact that this actually made the news. So the headline, this is out of the Baltimore Sun. Amtrak train kills bald eagle eating dead deer on tracks near Aberdeen. And I'm just going to read the majority of the story because there ain't that much to it. So a bald eagle was killed by train Thursday morning while enjoying breakfast on a stretch of tracks near Aberdeen, according to the United States Fish and Wildlife Service. Catch this, Craig Copey, the eagle coordinator with the federal agency. Yes, we have eagle coordinators. Said the rare encounter happened in a flash. The bird was eating a deer carcass about 8:30 a.m. as an Amtrak train headed to Washington approached. An engineer spotted the bird and blasted his horn, but the eagle took off too slowly and was hit.
He was full.
He was full. He was out of there.
couldn't get the lift.
Fast forwarding the story to today, I was reading an article earlier today about how Congress is looking to cut $100 billion out of our budget, and they're only $35 billion along the way. I'm thinking...
The eagle coordinator.
I'm thinking the eagle coordinator can go. I mean, eagles aren't even considered endangered species
anymore. They're not an endangered
anymore.
Species.
Why do we have an eagle coordinator?
And what does an eagle coordinator do except for...
Coordinate eagles.
Well, I'll be around to comment on stories like that. And while we're on the subject of deer, this was the subject of a story in the Columbia Flyer this week, or the Howard County Times, always getting confused. The Valentine's Day deer massacre. It turns out that...
Speaking of gift-giving.
The Valentine's... I love the hyperbole. You know, the fact of the matter about deer populations in a suburban setting like we have, they're overpopulated. Their natural predators are gone. So it's important, not only for the health of the deer, but for the health of everybody in general, to thin these herds out once in a while, and we have these managed deer hunts. Well... some folks along Bonnie Branch Road in Ellicott City are very upset about this. They're afraid that these sharpshooters are, first of all, they think it's inhumane. I don't know how I see that. And then they say that, you know, the sharpshooters could easily, you know, a bullet could bounce off ice and into one of their homes.
Well, Betsy Collins, who apparently lives in Bonnie Branch and has been there for some 34 years, she says, "We love watching the deer come down. We look at them every day, and they're simply gorgeous." You know what? When I let my dog out, and he goes outside, and she rubs her face and dog poop all over—I mean, deer poop all over my backyard. I don't think it's all that gorgeous.
No, no.
Get out of my yard.
Well, and the other
be thing, gorgeous somewhere else.
You know, somebody else. I think there was another comment about they wonder if this woman has pests in her home, using insecticide to get rid of the pests. Some people think that roaches are beautiful too. So you know.
But then there's that.
And actually, the comment was, bullets, I don't care how good they are. If they hit, this is talking about bullets now. If they hit water or a chunk of ice, something, they can bounce. You know, what are these? I don't want a chunk of ice that a bullet can bounce off of, you know. that's no longer ice.
Very cold winter we've
very
had.
Very cold winter. Very cold winter.
All right, so moving from deer to bees. You know, this is
wildlife.
A story, wildlife. This is a story that has been plaguing Howard County for, I think, upwards of 3 years now. And what started as a really very simple request on the part of some individuals that like to maintain beehives in their yard, until recently, the zoning for bees was exactly the same as that of farm animals, and it required them to be at least 200 feet away from property lines.
Right.
And the proposed amendment would have them be much closer, allowing people with smaller yards to maintain beehives in their backyard. Well, this thing took on a life of its own over the last 3-plus years, I think.
Don't squeeze the bees.
Don't squeeze the bees. So finally, this came to resolution, I think, earlier this week. The county council unanimously went ahead and voted in favor of beekeepers, who are now permitted to keep their beehives within 25 feet of their property line, and in some cases, even 10 feet.
You know, and there's a lot of people that know a lot more about bees than they did before. I didn't know that European honeybees don't generally sting. Did you know that?
I did not. But I do know that bees are a very important part of our system.
Our ecosystem.
Ecosystem.
But it's nice to know that the European honeybees have civility. You know, American honeybees, not so much. You know, but
but American bees that live in Howard County do have civility.
That's right. They choose civility. Yeah.
So they do.
Well, you know, and a lot of this was really brought up by this one neighbor of a guy who kept bees. And he... I think there was a joke there. He really led the charge against getting these bees removed from people's yards, and he's still upset. You know, this guy, Mr. I guess his name Peppertone, Sam Peppertone.
It's Coppertone's cousin.
Yeah, he says this new law denies me the use of my property. He said, referring to complaints that bees come in. He says bees come into yards in swarms looking for water in dry, hot weather. He said, they said that's okay. If he has a new complaint, he'll have to fire a new zoning complaint, which would put him back at square one. You know, I think it happened once. The bees came into his yard, and anyway, now we have a new law.
We do.
That's a good...
Move on, right?
In the same council meeting, when they approved the bee thing after much deliberation, they're also arguing over the sign regs for Columbia Town Center.
This is a tough issue.
It is a tough issue. At first glance, it was like, you know... Listen, Columbia sign regs have always been a bit of a problem.
And no one can ever find anything.
Nobody can ever find anything.
Right.
It's the town of I can see it, but I can't get to it. And merchants and businesses have been complaining about it for years. And, you know, the town center redevelopment plan has given us an opportunity to take a look at this and address this issue. But it's a large, you know, technology has moved so far ahead of where we were.
Well, we have electronic billboards now. We have electronic signage that you can change signs on. You can make them look like Las Vegas, or you can make them look a lot more suburban if you choose to. But how do you regulate that?
There is. You know, there's a, as a matter of fact, there's a small little retail center at the corner of Meadow Ridge Road and Route 100.
I know it well.
I think Don Ruhr developed it over there. And he's got a small reader board now. It's a pylon sign with the names of the stores in the little retail center, but with a electronic billboard on the top of it. You know, at what point does that become billboard advertising, which is not permitted in Howard County?
Right. You can't advertise for someone else.
Right. You can't advertise for someone else, but in that case, I guess you can advertise for the shops in the center. There's a whole new world of sign regulations that they're going to take the time with it, and I think that's a good thing.
I do, too. I mean, I think there's... It's an important issue. I think we need to be open-minded to different forms of advertising, and I think we need to be respectful to landowners and their ability to market their properties and the products that they sell on their properties.
Yeah.
So just got to figure out a way to do it right, I guess.
And since we're on technology?
Since we're on technology.
We have a technology story.
You know, I don't even know if this is a technology story or if this is just, oh my God, what are parents doing out there again? So this is a Washington Post story from earlier this week. And apparently there's some parents that are upset because their children are racking up huge fees at the Apple App Store from purchasing, get this, Smurf Berries and other virtual, I can't even pronounce this word.
Tchotchkes. Yeah, virtual tchotchkes.
Okay. So the parents are blaming Apple for making it too easy for kids to download apps, and they're racking up fees. Well, I got two kids, and I got to tell you, when my kids get a hold of my iPhone, they need a password.
Right.
They don't know the password, and if I don't give them the password, they can't download apps.
They can't buy anything.
So, another classic example of parents not taking responsibility for being parents, making this a teaching moment,
right?
Explaining to them this costs money, you can't have it for free.
Yeah.
If you want this, maybe you need to do some extra work around the house.
Or choose what you want. You know, you can have money for this, or you can have money
right.
for that. You know,
use your allowance for it, or yeah, whatever.
Whatever. But no, you got to blame Apple because Apple's made it too easy to do this.
Always blame somebody else. And speaking of blaming somebody else, we got another parent out there who's not happy.
This deals with the Arlington County schools. There's a woman who has a child. Her daughter is in preschool in Arlington County, Northern Virginia. And this was actually the same column by John Kelly in the Washington Post. Her daughter in preschool was kicked out of preschool because she wasn't toilet trained, and they gave her a couple warnings. You know, they thought, well, a couple times it could be an accident, but it was happening continually. This child still hadn't been properly toilet trained and was having accidents regularly at preschool, so they kicked her out. Well, the mother, in a moment of, you know, righteous indignation, says the law needs to be changed. They shouldn't be allowed to throw my child out if she's not potty trained. 3 years old. You should potty train.
How is she possibly going to be able to get the time to go get her manicure and facial if she can't drop her kid off at daycare?
It's potty parody.
Is that more of a problem with girls than boys?
That's a good question.
When you mention potty parody, I think of the restroom issues. But anyway.
Stand up and be counted.
I guess it's time to introduce our guest because we're going to stand up and be counted. We'll stand up.
If we wait any longer, she's going to introduce herself. Sandy, want to welcome you. Sandy Schrader, senator, and now working as a lobbyist with the Artemis Group.
Yes, I am.
Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate this. This is the first time I've been to the mall in a while.
Since Christmas, probably.
I don't get out much. and
lots of good things happen. We just had somebody from Williams-Sonoma drop us by sandwiches.
Wow.
I mean, this is...
No wonder you guys hang out here. Free food.
And I got to tell you, it's got to be you because we don't get this kind of attention when you're not here.
Yeah, right.
Words out on the street,
you
I guess.
Silver tongue devils.
So, Sandy, let's start with you are a former senator.
Yes.
You come from a very political family. Your husband, having been a former county councilman, and ran again for county council this past election cycle,
and
run for county executive.
Yep.
So, what drives your family to be such political animals? What is
that?
Is this like a hobby?
This is like Wild Kingdom. You guys talk about eagles and bees, and now we're political animals.
You know? That's our theme today, animals.
Mm. I think it's both Dennis and I have this, I want to say it's an inner urge to do the right thing and to give back to the community. And, you know, quite frankly, if you can't beat them, you join them. Is kind of our motto. And someone has to be a leader and make tough choices. And so we both feel that we have that kind of inner strength And it takes a lot. It takes a lot to put yourself out there because, as you all know,
you don't always win.
You take the hits.
Yeah.
You have to have some thick skin.
And then you got to apologize.
And I don't get that one at all.
We'll go there later.
Yeah, we can go there later. But we think that it's part of giving back to the community.
So much like I would serve on a board or Dennis would serve
Absolutely.
On a board, you guys
exactly.
run for elected office. It's just
right.
your way of giving back to the community.
Right.
But and there's actually been quite a while. Now, I mean, I think when Dennis was on our show, we had Dennis on our show last year, he said, how long you've got a streak for one of you putting yourself up for office between the two of you for how many
Since
years?
Since 1990.
Now? Wow. Unbelievable.
Is that streak going to continue?
I think so.
Okay. Well, we'll go there later, too.
And I'm not apologizing for it either. So those of you out there who have sweatshirts or T-shirts, don't throw them out yet.
Yeah, but you've had a chance now. You're on the other side of the equation, elected, and now the lobbyists. How's it different?
Well, actually, it's very interesting, and I love what I do. Our office is gorgeous. It's a 5,000 square foot. 100-year-old home that's been totally refurbished. We're a block away from the State House, so we're right in the thick of things. And prior to being elected as the first woman senator in Howard County, I was Marty Madden's staff person. So I've been the staff person, I've been the elected official, and now I'm on the other side as being the advocate or the lobbyist. So I think I bring a really unique perspective. Although there are a lot of lobbyists out there, and many of them are former elected officials, knowing how the inner office works and knowing the timing of issues, and one of the biggest things that I feel that a lobbyist needs is their integrity and their word. Your word has to be your bond. And you can't go to an elected official and ask them to support your bill or sponsor your bill unless you give them as much of the information as you have as possible. And unfortunately, that happens a lot.
So the role of a lobbyist, how much of a role on a state level does a lobbyist play in convincing a legislature to vote a certain way or in getting that legislature to perhaps introduce legislation that a client of yours is seeking to have introduced? How influential is a lobbyist in that capacity?
It can be huge. If sometimes there's some elected officials have the knowledge, they have the background, they know exactly what they want to do, and they have an agenda. Many times it's the company or the lobbyist that helps to create the agenda for the elected official. And quite frankly, the lobbyist provides the background information and the folks that will testify either for or against a certain piece of legislation. So in some of these very large, contentious issues, the lobbyist plays a very deep and meaningful role.
So do the legislatures actually use you to educate them about
yes.
issues?
Yes.
So basically, they don't have the resources, and their staff people can do some of it, but
right.
not all of it.
Some of them do, but because we are representing that particular interest or company or whatever it is, we bring as much information to them, and then we also provide the connection with the actual people that the legislation would affect. Give you an example. I represent the Maryland Dental Hygienists Association. So we've been doing a lot of work the last 3 years.
That's got to be like pulling teeth. Sorry. Yeah, I couldn't.
Oh, I know. I knew it was coming. I could tell in your eyes. But we've been working with Senator Mac Middleton, and because Mac and I have known each other for, 10, 15 years, and we both have had an extensive amount of dental work, he understands, and from a consumer point, Mac really gets what the dental hygienist profession is all about. So he's been helping to identify areas where the hygienist can do more and work with the elderly and work with the handicapped. So we turn to Mac, and then we provide him as much of the intricacies of the profession as possible. He has a great staff, and they're extremely intelligent, but our folks from the Dental Hygienists Association bring the day-to-day information.
From the front lines,
from
really.
From the front lines, yeah, right.
How important is it for a lobbyist to specialize in a particular area versus just being sort of a general lobbyist?
Well, when you're inside of a company, for instance, like Constellation, BG&E, Verizon, you need to specialize. That's your area. Whatever has to do with that affects that company. Outside, for instance, myself and our firm and most of the other firms, you have a wealth of information from the individuals, but most of the time you have a very diversified portfolio.
You know, I'm sorry. One of the things I want to get to is you as amongst lobbyists, you have a very unique situation because you were a senator. Are there many other of your colleagues that also have served in elected office? And as a former senator, you also have access. You still have some of the privileges, correct? Of a senator.
Well, there aren't really any privileges.
I think she had to turn her license plates in.
You don't get to keep the license plate.
No, I had to take them off my car. I still have them.
but is there like any special lounges or anything that
no.
you still have access to?
No. Mm-mm. No. Actually, as a former elected official or a lobbyist, you can apply for a special ID card that allows you to get in and out of the buildings quicker than the
and you have one.
Yes, I do.
Okay.
And, you know, if you haven't burned any bridges, the guards remember you, you're in.
You're in.
are most lobbyists politically affiliated
yes.
on the right or the left?
Yes.
And how does that impact their ability to get work done?
Well, when we talk about are they affiliated one way or the other, yes. But when you're representing your client, you really have to be fairly neutral. And you know, I know that because I served a year under the Glendenning administration and then 4 years under the Ehrlich administration, so you've got both parties being represented. And now, you know, we've got Governor O'Malley, who's a Democrat. So I think the most effective lobbyists are those people that, yes, they have their political views and they're involved in whichever party, but they also understand that they have to be balanced and they have to be respectful of the other party and represent their clients, do what's best for the clients.
It sounds like you're talking about relationships.
Oh, absolutely. It's all about relationships.
So they have to have a meaningful relationship with both sides of the aisle if
yes.
they're going to get anything done. If they're polarized one way or another, then it's going to be much more difficult for them to get things done.
I would think so. Now, I mean, we have to be honest here. Our state, we don't have a balance of party here. So if someone is leaning and they're really entrenched in the Democratic Party and they're a lobbyist, obviously they have a leg up as opposed to someone like myself or another Republican who, you know, may or may not have those relationships on the other side. But going back to, because I was an elected official, I don't think I burned any bridges while I was in the Senate. In fact, I was the one.
Maybe not while in the Senate, but maybe during the campaign?
No. That's a whole different.
That's a whole different
arena. That's a whole different arena. But I have to say that one of the things that I feel is very important is the relationships between the elected officials, between the Republicans and the Democrats. And while I was in office, every Monday night, because we meet at 8 o'clock in the evening, after that session was over, I invited everyone from both sides of the aisle to come back to the house that I rented. And we had, dinner or heavy hors d'oeuvres.
So is it much friendlier on a casual basis
yes.
than it is than it's perceived?
And you get to
be?
Know people because, quite frankly, you can disagree on a certain subject level, but you need to respect your colleagues for where they're coming from, and hopefully they respect you from where you're coming from. And when you debate on the floor, you debate on the floor, and then that's it.
And you actually had a very good relationship as a Republican with the Democratic leadership.
Yes, I did.
Well, in essence, you're all working in the same industry. That's
right.
Why, you know, so it's inside. So, well, you
it's
know,
important.
Relationships are a hot topic in Howard County this week because
yes,
we've
they
had
are.
We've had something that we're calling the Diane Wilson affair.
It's been called a lot of things.
It's been called a lot of things. And what I'm referring to is for those listeners who don't know, the Chamber of Commerce had an opening for a legislative director. They interviewed several people and settled on a woman that you know, mm-hmm. Diane Wilson. She worked for your husband.
Yes, she did.
She worked for your husband. She also ran once for the District 3 County Council seat against Guy Gazzone. Anyway, she, after the process, the vetting process and the interview process, she was selected for the job.
Mm-hmm.
Stayed in the job for a total of 1 week. And there was some political fallout from that. Based upon relationships, there were people that felt that she would not be capable of maintaining those relationships or keeping good relationships with the electeds in Howard County.
Yeah, there was some question whether she would be an effective advocate on behalf of the chamber, given what I guess has been characterized as a poor relationship with some of the elected officials, both on a county and a state level.
Well, and I have to interrupt here because we're using the word relationship, and I think... it's party affiliation at the top of the list, because Diane Wilson was a realtor in Howard County, very successful for 25, 27 years, something like that, until she started working for Dennis in the 90s. And eventually, she ended up to be the assistant deputy secretary of general services down in Annapolis, where you have to work with both sides of the aisle. And she was absolutely loved by both the Democrats and the Republicans because of the
they
type
sent
of
her Valentine's?
I think they actually did. I mean, Diane's the kind of person that would go down and sit in the boiler room with the guys and, you know, hear what their concerns were. And she traveled the state. Because
we still have boiler rooms?
Yes, they do, because those buildings are old. But, you know, she's the kind of person that doesn't look at party affiliation in any type of relationship, whether it's a business or a personal relationship. So, you know, this just came out of the blue because...
So this decision blindsided you?
Yes.
You didn't expect this?
No, I didn't expect this, and I know she didn't expect this because we have friends on both sides of the aisle, and...
But if you talk to some of the local Dems, they'll say, you should have expected it. I mean, there's an amazing kind of...
But and you alluded to this a little while ago when we were talking about elected office versus running for office. And it sounds to me, from reading the stories in the paper, that the criticism or frustration with Diane is not that she's party affiliated as a Republican, but how she handled her election for District 3 County Council seat when she ran against Guy.
That was in 2002. First of all, so, you know, we're talking 11 years ago. And, you know, things happen in campaigns. Sometimes it's not...
How many years ago?
11, right? No,
I'm counting nine, but that's okay.
Nine, something, sorry.
It's a new math.
You're not my CPA, are you?
I was distracted by the J. Jill shop over there and what they have on sale.
It's tough being here in the mall sometimes.
That's right.
People bring us food. And there's, yeah.
Well, whether it was 9 years or 1 year, when you run for office, that's it. You get over it. And you move on and do what you're supposed to do. And, you know, quite frankly, at the end of the day, Guy won that election. So I'm not quite sure. I've never heard. And, you know, I've been around and been in both, you know, heavily Democratic parties, you know, like occasions, events.
Yeah.
And I've never heard Guy or anybody else refer to that or refer to what happened in that campaign. Just like I don't talk about the 2002 and the 2006 campaign that I was involved in. I mean,
well,
there was a lot of junk that went out about me, and you know what? It's over.
It's interesting.
You move on.
You move on.
Yeah, I mean, you had a pretty tough campaign against Jim Robey.
Yeah, it was grueling.
Brutal, yeah, I remember that. Now, but do you get along with Jim now?
Yeah.
Do you lobby him?
Yes, I've talked to him, absolutely.
Okay. And you feel that that relationship is fine?
Yeah. Okay. And, you know, it's interesting you bring that up, because in 2002, when I was elected as senator, and Jim was county executive at that time, and obviously we had a lot of dealings because of the county.
Right.
Herman Charity and I became really good friends. We used to have dinner every couple of months, and we always welcomed Jim and Sang, who was with him at the time.
Right.
Come into our office, leave your briefcases and your coats and whatever. Even though he and Dennis had a brutal campaign in 1998, over it.
Right.
We're adults.
Well, and in fact, Diane Wilson's predecessor, Lee Wildeman, who is also a Republican and actually worked under Governor Ehrlich in his administration,
right,
as Kendall Ehrlich's, I think, scheduler, and then worked in other departments,
right,
within the Ehrlich administration. She had that job prior to Diane's short stint, and she's a Republican, and she seems to have gotten along well.
And her predecessor was also Republican, right?
And her predecessor, I believe, was also Republican.
Heidi Gash, right?
Heidi Gash, right, exactly.
Yeah, this whole thing that happened the past couple of weeks is just really unfortunate, because It would have been a great fit for Diane, because she really understands the legislative process and the ins and outs, and she's been in Howard County since the early 70s. This is so unfortunate. And it also bothers me, because it's, as an elected official, it is against the ethics, that the oath that you take to be influential in private business or in someone who's seeking a job.
Well, and we probably ought to back up just a little bit and kind of finish the story, Dennis, that you started.
Right.
So the story goes that there were a number of conversations that took place between elected officials, specifically County Council Chair Calvin Ball and County Executive Ken Allman.
After she was hired.
After she was hired.
Right.
And obviously the stories get gray from here as to exactly what those conversations were and with whom they were.
Unless you were in the room, you don't know.
Unless
really
you were in the room and you don't know, and I wasn't, and you weren't.
Right.
But the story goes that there was some undue influence exerted upon the chamber, and as a result of these conversations and undue influence, the chamber made a decision to ask for Diane's resignation. And in fact, she wasn't there for even a week.
Yeah, you and I have some disagreement on this. But as far as I'm concerned, the chamber got some good pushback from this, or some bad pushback from this, and they felt it might hurt their relationships with the county. But at that point, they'd made the decision. It kind of boggles my mind why they didn't say, to the electeds and whoever called them, they said, I hear you, but we have made the decision. We've hired her. We're going to see how it works out for 60 days, 90 days, whatever, and then make a decision. Everybody has kind of a probationary period when they start a new job.
There's three issues. One, I think, is did the chamber hire the right person? Did they vet out the candidates for this position adequately, and did they make the right call? And if they made the right call, then I completely agree with you. The second issue being, why did they allow these conversations, whatever they were, to convince them or coerce them into terminating somebody that they vetted and they concluded was the best person qualified for the job?
And yet now we have, Ms. Wilson has filed an ethics complaint.
Yes.
And from what I've read, it's going to be kind of tough to win that battle. I mean, she's... Paul, you pointed out, what is it, something about...
I think it suggests that you have to exert your...
Prestige of office,
yes, for personal gain. And
right.
I think the question is going to be, was there personal gain? How did they personally gain from allegedly making these phone calls and allegedly suggesting to the chamber that Diane's got to go?
Well, it'll be interesting. That obviously is up to the ethics committee. The bottom line is if there was undue influence, it's absolutely inappropriate. It's wrong, and it should never be done.
It's also been brought to our attention that the state's ethics rules are being rewritten. Is that correct?
Oh, that I don't know.
Yeah, I believe that, that Howard County may actually have to revisit their rules as a result of that, too. So maybe this is something that's addressed.
Look, again, this is a hypothetical discussion because we don't really know what happened. But if, in fact, conversations did take place between elected officials in which they told a private organization, you need to fire this person or we will not work with you.
Right.
If that is really what happened, then I think the ethics rules need to condemn that kind of behavior. I don't think we can afford to have elected officials making those kind of coercive statements to private sector businesses.
Well, and quite frankly, maybe this is a teachable moment for other elected officials.
Back to the app thing, you know.
Right.
It's a teachable moment.
The teachable moment is
it costs money to buy apps.
That's right. The teachable moment is that sometimes as an elected official, you don't realize how much influence you actually have. Now, some elected officials play that. They play that card. They know. And there's others who don't. And so maybe this is a teachable moment for those elected officials who don't realize
how much... Don't have that awareness.
Right. Don't realize how much influence that be careful with your words and the opinions that you convey to others because...
Casual conversations take place all the time.
Yes.
And sometimes casual conversations can
are misconstrued.
Yeah. And yeah. You know what?
We should also point out, Sandy and Paul and I talked about this before, we did invite the Chamber of Commerce to come on today and kind of give their
perspective.
Their perspective of it, and as well as
at the advice of counsel, they have declined.
Right. And as well as Councilman Ball, council chair. And he also played lead kind because of perhaps, you know,
there's an ethics investigation
that's
taking place at this point.
Right.
And we've also actually invited Diane Wilson to join us today as well.
Right.
And she also declined.
Nobody was.
Nobody wanted to come talk to us about it. So
just
with
saying.
Kids, I'm here.
You're here. We're thankful.
But you were coming either way, Sandy.
That's right.
So, Sandy, crystal ball, how's this going to play out?
I don't know. I do think, though, I mean, it could die tomorrow or it could bring on a life of its own. I don't think the chamber is a victim here. And it's unfortunate because the business community works really hard to keep and bring in business to help those of us have a reasonable tax base,
right,
so to speak.
Right.
And a lot of people don't understand that the more business we have, the better off it is for the residents because
right.
we pay less because businesses pay more.
It's also jobs and everything else. You know.
Oh, absolutely. Jobs and your quality
support
of life.
Our economy.
And it's, you know,
get
it's,
people shopping here in the mall.
It's that circle of life, so
right.
to speak. So I feel bad that this happened to Diane. I feel bad that the chamber felt that they had to do this. And so there had to be a certain amount of information conveyed from someone to the chamber for the chamber to then say, we need to have you resign. And that is unfortunate that the chamber can't, that their hands are so tied that they feel constricted.
I think they overreacted, but that's my...
And that, I mean, that may have happened.
And I don't think there's any winners here. I think that everybody...
Yeah. I think we can all agree on that.
Yeah,
I think
trust has taken a backseat here. So
very unfortunate.
On that note, I think we're going to have to cut this conversation off. We're coming up against the end of our show here. Sandy,
well,
we want to...
Before we say adieu, I just want to make sure that you guys are going to be doing something for your lovely wives for Valentine's Day.
Paul,
well, you know, Sandy, it sounds like you've just offered to take Dennis and me shopping after the show.
I've got some chocolates. I'm going to grab one of these chocolates.
And you can't wrap up what you were given.
Well,
here.
One of them is in a nice heart-shaped box.
Well, you know, but I think
if any of those are dark chocolate, they're spoken for.
I think your wives would love just maybe a little handwritten poem.
Roses are red, violets are blue. I don't know.
Oh, boy. Yeah. I'm not sure you want to go there.
Sandy, thank you very much for joining
us
today. We appreciate you coming out.
It was a lot of fun.
It's a busy time of the year for you, and we appreciate you,
you
taking the time to be on our show.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. That about wraps up yet another episode of Then There's That. On behalf of myself and my co-host, Paul Scowney, we'd like to thank our producer, Dave Bittner, for making us look good on radio, and to the Mall in Columbia for hosting our show again today and providing us all these nice little treats. We'll be back again on February 25th with a special show on the burgeoning cybersecurity industry in and around Howard County. We hope you'll join us.